time to tell the neighbors that Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, we're back on. We'll be here till noon today. And we have three World War II veterans with us today. Kensel Clutter, Cecil Denton, and Don Wilson. And they're relating stories of their service to this country. And if anybody ever deserved to be addressed like, thanks for your service, these guys are it. I mean, these guys have been through the thick of it. Okay, let's go back to, let's see, we'll start with Kensel Clutter. Okay, Kensel, you were shot down. Your arm was, what was broken in your arm?
Well, actually, I was hit in the middle of the scapula, that's the wing bone, and they couldn't figure out why that. I kept telling them that I could feel the projectile on the front side whenever they would thump.
Oh.
For 7 weeks, the doctor said, Sonny, if that projectile is where you say it is, you'd be dead. And they couldn't figure that out. But eventually, because of the numbness in my arm and so on and so forth, they decided they'd operate, and the projectile was right where I said it was. I have the projectile at home.
No kidding.
At home in my collection.
Oh, my land. It and that came through the plane and entered your body.
We think it was a part of the nose of a 20-millimeter explosive shell.
Oh, okay.
And it was 1¾ inches long, 1/8 inch thick, and about 3/16 inch wide. So it was a pretty good chunk of metal. How it was managed to get through my back and into my front without puncturing the lung and without damaging the big cord of nerves that does your arm and severing the artery that's in that area. They finally decided that it was curved at the same angle of curve that my ribs were.
Oh, okay.
And they think it was spinning. It made a hole as large as a 50-cent piece in my scapular bone, but by that time, it lit flat against my rib, and then it skidded around my rib, and that way it went underneath between the major parts of my body, like your artery and your nerves, and then as it got out on the other side, for some reason or other, then it started straight out again, and stopped just before it hit the artery, then in the front of your shoulder.
I think it knew you had great things to do after the war. Oh, my. But didn't that hurt when you breathed? Did you notice pain in your chest when you breathed?
No, because, you see, it didn't injure anything in my chest. It skidded around the bone.
Okay.
And all it was my arm. I just...
Couldn't use your arm right.
Couldn't use my arm at all. And in those days, X-ray could not go through the side of your arm, through all that bone, and so they couldn't pinpoint it.
Oh, is that right?
And so that was the reason why the doctors kept telling me, Kensel, if that was where you say it is, you'd be dead, because they were sure that it would have severed an artery or punctured a lung, either one of which I would have bled to death.
And yet you knew it was there because you could feel it.
Every time they'd thump on my chest, it hurt.
Oh, I bet. I can only imagine when they put a stethoscope up to you, said, breathe deeply. Ooh, yeah. Okay, now back to Don Wilson. And Don, on the PBM, Did you think he had some good hits that you
I think so, but I can't really tell you. I know one day we were in a dive and we had 650 caliber machine guns firing out of the wings, and he was shooting at something. I don't know what it was, but I looked out my window and I could see bullets coming up.
Oh, coming up.
I said, I never knew of a bullet, a 50 caliber bullet, ricocheting off of water. But they were ricocheting. Really? I said to the pilot, I said, what are you trying to do, shoot us down?
Oh, why?
Strange.
Yeah.
I never saw that again or before.
Right. But it must have been the angle that the plane...
Yeah, the angle had to be just right.
Yeah, just exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he was the type of guy that would dive deeper, steeper, faster, and pull more G's than anybody else.
That's right.
Because sometimes when you pull out of a dive, then you can see the wings wrinkle.
Oh, know, no kidding.
Yeah, the metal on the wing, you know.
Yeah. Hey, Kensel, you encountered the same thing.
No, I just know from what he's talking.
Yeah.
As he says, it would be the right angle, and as it hit the water and start up at the other angle, his speed would carry him over the top of it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
And that's how it would happen.
I just didn't know that a bullet would ricochet off the water.
Yeah.
Angle.
And you never know. Maybe some of our planes got shot down that way.
Yeah, because they were coming right up, and I could see them, you know.
Yeah.
Go by.
Oh, boy. So did you encounter, of course, being in a plane, you didn't encounter any Japanese face-to-face?
No. No, okay. Never did.
You were
always
in the air. Yeah.
I think it's still one of the best jobs available because I survived.
Oh, yes. And
you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I survived. There were times when I thought, well, I'm not going to make it back to carrier, but I was blessed. You know, you can't put it any other way.
Right. You never became oppressed or distressed.
No.
Oh,
it just seemed that, I don't know, the good Lord is looking out for me special, I think.
Right. Cecil, same way as you. You were in the thick of it. You saw Japanese face-to-face, I take it.
Oh, yes.
Many times.
Many times.
Yeah.
That's what I was there for.
Yeah. And when they pointed a gun at you, what's the feeling like?
Well, they didn't.
They didn't get a chance?
They didn't get a chance.
Okay. Because
I had that grease gun
on, the draw.
On my hip. And
That's the grease gun.
That's the grease gun.
It looks just like a grease gun with a handle on it.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
And if you handed that to me at the time when I trained with an M1 and a bazooka and a BAR and a pistol and... Then they handed me that to go into combat with.
Yeah.
I thought they was nuts.
And that's something. I remember, too, during the war, there was a kind of like a rocket that slid down on your rifle barrel. I saw one that had been used.
That's a rifle grenade.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, I used that many times.
No kidding.
Yeah, because they wanted us to go into the caves and bring them out alive.
Yes.
That's not a good idea, because they had all them keys booby-trapped.
Yeah.
And so...
They were
their
way around.
The lieutenant and I decided it was a lot easier to get into them keys after you sent in a rifle grenade.
Yeah. Did you ever use any flamethrowers?
Yes, we had a flamethrower.
Yeah.
And the best way to use them was to get close enough to the cave that you could turn around and shoot it the other direction and let the fire go into the cave.
Okay. But the caves, too, after the war was over, a lot of those guys didn't know the war was over, and they killed a lot of our men.
I don't think we lost many men. After that, because we had the island pretty well cleaned off.
Okay.
The same way with the Leyte. We covered the whole island.
Great.
And 1 foot.
Yeah. My dad, being on Guam, he said the guys would go out souvenir hunting. And it was their mistake because he found them dead. Japanese had come out of the caves and killed them.
Yeah.
And the war was over. So now tell me, after the war, in 1945, Doris Day came out with a song, Sentimental Journey. And Dad said they just stood around and cried.
Yeah.
Was that the case with you?
Yeah, that is true, yeah. It's just like when I got married in the Navy, it was funny because as I was saying, my wife, who was a girlfriend, said, I can't live here anymore, I'm going to leave. I said, where are you going to go? And I said, I got a little money in the bank, have my dad take it out and give it to you. You come to Memphis, where I was going to radio school,
yes,
and we'll get married. Well, after I hung up, I thought, oh boy, what did I do? How am I going to get my way out of this, you know?
Yes.
So I went to our local preacher, and he said, don't worry about it, I'll take care of everything. You know, they did. I had a Navy wedding.
Yes.
And about 40 guys were there from my group. And my best man was like my brother. And after the wedding, we finished radio school, went to San Diego. We were sitting in a mess hall, he and I talking. And in come this officer, and he talked to us a little bit. And my friend's name was Glenn Heath, out of Indiana. And the officer said, come on, Glenn, you're going with us. And I never heard from him again.
Wow.
And I found out he was shot down. Their plane was shot down, and all three guys were killed.
Yeah.
Never. But after about 4 years ago, my nephew and his wife and I went to Pearl Harbor, and we went to this cemetery where everybody
that was killed at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, what's the name of that? I can't think of the name.
I know what you mean.
No, the cemetery.
The cemetery, oh, yeah.
And they have like a whole list of people missing in action.
Yes.
And don't you know, I found my friend's name there.
Oh, my.
On that wall.
That must have got to you.
I bet, yeah. Two of us, it was in my group, their names were on there, but
wow.
My friend, you know, my best friend,
isn't that something?
Was on that missing in action.
Yeah.
Just little things that come up that are really, really interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure glad you men are able to talk, you know, because we're going to, unless this history goes down, people are going to forget the trials and tribulations, really, of World War II. Now, back home, we had rationing. You guys didn't have to worry about one thing, or did you?
You know, that, to me, they give us a lot of credit, but the civilian population, with all the sacrifices they made, if it hadn't been for them, we wouldn't have won the war.
That's right. I can remember that so well.
Just that simple.
I agree with
yeah.
that one 100%.
Yeah.
And I remember walking around with holes in my shoe, waiting for a stamp to come up that I could get new shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And buy gasoline, it was almost impossible.
Oh, yes. We had to have numbers in our windshield.
Uh-huh.
If you're a farmer or if you're working in a plant that was necessary for the military,
right,
you got a certain amount of gasoline.
That's an R stamp.
Yes, yes.
meat was rationed, everything.
Oh, yes.
And like I say, the civilians, if they hadn't done what they did, we wouldn't have won the war.
We were faithful, for the most part, in supporting the war, that's for sure.
That's
contrast to other times.
That's what I love about our country.
Yeah.
Is our good patriotic Americans.
That's right.
You can't beat them.
You put us under the pressure like that, and support comes.
Boy, they come fighting. Yes, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be kind of tough at times.
Uh-huh.
Boy. But, yes, World War II. It seems like it was just yesterday that I was looking at the rationing book and with my parents, and I remember the newspaper put a picture on the front page of me standing with my mother in a line of about 30 women trying to buy meat at Heckard's Meat Market in Bucyrus.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
It was something.
And I remember, too, oranges and bananas. Oh, my goodness. When we paid our weekly grocery bill, our the guy that owned the grocery would look around, and he was goes back to Germany. Kostenbader was his name.
Charlie, rumor has it,
we'll be right
one
back.
Year Buckeye Chuck died the morning of Groundhog Day, and you passed off a stuffed groundhog to the audience.
Well, yes, that did happen.
Did the crowd notice?
Well, not really. I just told the crowd he was scared to death of the audience, and they didn't know how true that was.
Honesty is always the best policy. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions, don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back once again with our World War II veterans. Okay, I can't remember what I was talking about the last time, but we were talking about rationing, for one thing, during World War II, and how loyal the people were in supporting the war effort. I remember saving grease and saving tin cans, and oh my goodness. And you wonder, often behind me in Bucyrus, there was a factory making incubators for chickens. When the war started, the man that owned that factory was out in the field testing caterpillar tractors he was building for the war. It's that quick. You know, we changed around quickly. I often wonder, was there an indication pretty strong that war was about to happen and you better get changed around now?
Yes, Roosevelt knew it a year or so. That he started the draft, you know, 1 year ahead of time.
Okay.
I got caught in that draft.
Oh, okay.
And I had signed up for the Air Force, but they didn't take me, and didn't know why it wasn't taking me. I found out later they didn't have any place to put me.
My.
And they were building barracks and stuff to get us there, but they almost took me into the regular army, even though I signed up at the Air Force, because the Air Force couldn't take me. They didn't have any place to train me.
Wow. And that was the days of the wild, off we go into the wild blue yonder, flying high into the sky.
I can tell you a little bit different story.
Yeah.
I left Mount Gilead with about 30 people in a bus to take our physical.
Oh, okay.
And I'd enlisted through the draft board for the Navy.
Yes.
So I went through down there while they gave me my physical papers, and on the top of it said U.S. Navy. So I took my physical and I got around to the end of it, and the guy says, "Well, you passed." And I said, "Well, wonderful." He said, looked at my papers, "The U.S. Navy, we don't know anybody in the Navy," and stamped on the top of it, and I was in the Army.
Oh, my.
29 of the boys went back to Mount Gilead, and I went to Camp Atterbury, Indiana.
Camp Atterbury. I hadn't heard that mentioned in a long time. I remember Camp Atterbury, Indiana.
Then from there, I went to Camp Walters, Texas for my 11 weeks training.
Charlie, that's the reason we were called GIs, General Issue.
Yeah. So they could kind of pick and choose where they needed you, yes. Oh, boy. I tried to join the Navy in the Korean War because I was a radio operator, a ham, and I could do 35 words a minute code. Mm-hmm. And they wanted men, and I didn't pass the physical. Or I'd have been, you know, in the Korean War.
And I almost would have guaranteed you that they would not allow you to use new code because you would have known more than the men that was over your head. So.
Yeah. Right, yes.
Yeah, it's something, yeah. Now, Don, you learned code.
Oh, yes.
How fast could you go?
Oh, boy, it's hard to remember, but I think maybe 35 words a minute.
Okay.
That wasn't really the best.
Well, that's pretty fast, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, we had the signal flags, lights.
Yes.
The Morse code. We had to learn all that, and I had a key in front of me all the time.
Oh, really? Did you have a key in the airplane?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, wasn't it something to operate a key while you were maneuvering?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a little bit difficult, yeah.
Yeah.
But it seemed, you know, for some reason we were able to do it. And
it's
amazing.
Do what you had to do, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's something.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember any of the code? I mean...
Oh, SOS?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something that never leaves you entirely.
No, not completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Cecil, did you...
Well, in the Army, they gave you a job to do. They weren't concerned of how you got it done, just so you got it done.
Okay. Just do it.
And so, yes, so I can understand.
Sure.
Lots of times we would be sent to do something. We didn't know how to do it, but we just did what we did best, and they'd accept it.
Uh-huh. Now, Cecil, then you didn't have to learn code, did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
Oh.
Did you opt it?
Yeah. How fast could you go?
I have no idea, but when I got so fast, I didn't want to be radio. I just wanted to be communications.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and you had to type, receive code and type it out, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
I took 6 weeks of typing in school.
Oh, well, I did, too.
So after I got out of combat, they come to me and they said, well, they tell me you're a clerk typist. And I said, well, I got a little typing. I can type. They said, well, your record says 60 words a minute. And I said, they're lying because it's more like 60 words an hour. And they said, that's good enough. So I went in as company clerk.
Is that right? Oh,
yes.
Boy. And if you didn't tell, yeah, I can do code, but I can also dig trenches.
Yeah, I can
foxholes. Boy. That must have been the pressure on you to dig foxholes. You had to dig pretty fast.
Well, we had to dig. They give us enough time where we tried to give us enough time that we could dig our foxholes. And then you had to take a bolo knife and go out around in front of you because you didn't want them to get that close to you without knowing.
Sure.
So you take a bolo knife and you clear off as much as you could around in front of you so you'd have at least a clean shot.
Okay, now... Did you use a typical shovel that were designed for that?
Well, that was a company issue, was a shovel.
Okay.
And the handle folded.
Did it fold? Yeah, yes. And that shovel wasn't that big, not that wide, was it?
No.
You just had to dig faster.
Well, yeah. Oh,
my.
But the ground was pretty soft. We didn't.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
We got our digging done whenever we needed it.
Now, you were on Leyte.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And
yeah, Cecil?
I used my helmet.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
we got caught one night without a foxhole, and we could hear the Jap planes coming in, and it happened to be a sandy beach, and... I just took off my helmet and just started scooping dirt as fast as I could.
I can picture that. Oh, boy.
Several men stood around me and kind of made fun of me for a little while until they heard the bombs coming down.
I bet.
I lit first in the bottom of that hole, and 6 men was on top of me.
Oh, my. Yeah. Became friends pretty quick.
Well,
friends in need.
Friends in need.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I get to thinking... This deal of at the airport last week.
Yes, yes.
I think that's one of the best things that they're doing now, so that people really recognize the importance of our military.
Yes.
And now here about a month ago, I had a plane come in, pick me up, and take me to the Akron airport for where they had a fly-in over there.
Oh, really?
And it was really interesting, really interesting, and big operation. So I like to see this out here really improve, get bigger.
I would too.
And be more advertised so they can have.
Yeah. I'd like to see Marion more of an aviation town than
right.
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know they're going to build the building out there, the new one.
Yeah.
But they were here like 3 years ago. They had like a big operation in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Oh, every year. Yes.
Yeah. And I had this woman call me, and she said, "I understand you did fly in a TBM." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I'd like for you to come to Oshkosh." That's a long old haul. She said, "Well, I'm working on something. Don't you give up." So on this particular Saturday, here come this Learjet under the Marion Airport, picked me up, took me to Oshkosh.
No kidding. Oh, my.
Yeah. And that guy stayed with me all day long.
Is that right?
And showed me all the, you know, that place was loaded with people.
Yes.
I said, "And there's nobody left in the United States. They're all in Oshkosh."
Yeah, right. It's right on the edge of the lake, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it really a great, and that's what I hope for Marion, to really increase their population as
that's,
the attendance.
That's my quest also. I was down Urbana at the airport down there.
Oh, yeah.
They got
there.
A restaurant.
Oh,
And they're putting together a B-17.
I know it.
Yeah. And they got these retired men. They don't receive pay. They work when
volunteers.
They can.
Volunteers.
Yeah.
They got all kind of instructions. Remember the hanging on the blueprints hanging
in all those rivets?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I got the chance last year to ride in the B-17.
Oh, yes.
When they come out here to the airport. And so they was going to take 15 of us up, and I was one of the World War IIs. And the guy, when we got down to the plane, he says, "Well, I need two volunteers." So I said, "Well, I was one of the World War IIs." I said, "I'll be one of them." And the guy behind me said, "Well, John will be the other." And all at once John says, "No, he won't. His son will be."
Oh.
So his son and I got in the plane. And he says, "Now turn to your right and go as far as you can go." Well, we got in there, and I was leading him, and he said, "Well, keep it going." And we was walking in, and all at once we was crawling. And pretty soon we was clear down on our bellies trying to get in the front. I got to the front end, and the guy said, "Well, you're World War II. You get in the bubble."
Oh, okay.
So I went up in the bubble, and nobody wanted to get in the bubble in the air, so I come back down in the bubble.
Well, that's good, yeah.
So that was a terrific ride.
And I remember going in the B-17 to the radio operator's position, and I looked, and there is the same receiver like I use in the ham radio called a BC-348. And that's the receiver out of a B-17.
That's pretty neat.
And I was in the Civil Air Patrol and requisitioned radio equipment from Wright-Patterson. That was one of them.
Well, how much does those machine guns beside them, that there B-17 that I was in, does that 500 shots in each one of them?
I don't know, but
600 shots a minute would come out of our machine gun.
600 a minute.
600 a minute.
I felt like I got cheated. I only had 30 rounds.
Oh, yeah. But your gun didn't heat up like the others did.
We had to shoot. They had to shoot in short bursts.
Yeah.
Or you'd get the gun too hot, and the barrel would soup down, and you couldn't
get
anything.
Well,
yeah,
maybe you think that grease gun didn't get hot.
Well, I bet it did, yeah.
You put a second round in that, a second clip in that, and you was going to melt her.
Yeah. Now, after your gun got so hot, would the accuracy go away?
Yeah. Yeah, it screwed it because barrel started sagging.
Warping, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see,
now, what'd they do in the Civil War they, on cannons that heated up? Probably nothing, huh?
I don't know what they did with those.
Yeah. Well, they were so slow, they couldn't get that much.
Apparently, yeah. They were thick enough to absorb the heat.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would think so.
Yeah, that was something. But I think of you digging those foxholes, Cecil. Boy, that under pressure. Wow.
Well, and by the time you got it dug, it's half full of water.
Yeah.
So you slept on your hands and knees.
Boy, your skin must have wrinkled up.
Well.
You never knew you were covered up.
You know, I have this friend is World War II, and he was in the invasion.
Ted,
okay,
you were really
gonna break
a pioneer.
In a second.
You were the first viral video in 2011.
Yes, that is true. But I have a problem since then. I was hoping you can help me with that, Scott.
What's that?
Well, I can't seem to find the right antibiotic to get rid of this viral video.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back on, and we'll be here for the next 13 minutes, so stay tuned. We have Cecil Denton, Don Wilson, and Kensel Clutter talking about experiences in World War II. Some of you may have never heard experiences like they've talked about this morning, but everyone needs to know the pressure these men were under to win World War II, and we sure did win it. We didn't walk away and say, well, we signed it, you know. You guys fought hard to win that war. And we're all safe today because of that.
I think if you're going to have a war, you better fight it to win.
Yes.
Not just to fight
and right.
Get a bunch of guys killed.
And that's the problem maybe with Afghanistan and some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
My, we've been in Afghanistan for so many years, spent so much money, and still... We'll never win that, apparently.
No, that goes on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I think history shows that if you don't kill at least 10% of the population, that you're going to have to turn around and fight that war.
Oh, okay.
I think history says that.
Yeah.
And I'm like the men here. You can't win a war without winning the war.
Sure. Now, Japan has become our ally, more or less, now. And it's hard to, you know, hard to believe that here, Bataan Death March and all these others, and all the hard-fought battles, and yet we drive their cars now.
That's what's hard for me. I suppose I should forget. But when the war was over, we dropped supplies to the POW camps.
Yes.
And I just can't, you know, I can't like what they did.
Yeah.
Because I talked to one fella that was a big guy from Australia, and he said every morning they would take this two Japs with bayonets and hold them in the back of his neck, and then get the smallest Jap they could find, put him on a box, and he could hit him in the face.
Oh.
You know, stupid things. Then
yeah.
they would shove the bayonets through guys' thighs.
Oh.
Just to hurt him, not to
yeah.
kill him, just to hurt him.
Yeah.
And to me, that's brutal. I can't get over it.
Yeah, that's something. So, Cecil or Kensel, after you recovered, did you ever recover enough to go back into the service? Apparently not.
It took me 11 months to gain the muscle back. They put me in an airplane split and didn't allow me to move my arm for 7 weeks.
Wow.
And when they got done, I could take my biceps and almost put my fingers and thumb together.
Yeah.
all the muscle had shrunk away. So it took me 11 months altogether before I gained enough strength to go to full-time flying again.
You actually flew after that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
But I didn't fly 24s. They sent me down to Hilo, Hawaii as operations officer, and I really had a vacation down there.
So, in other words, they didn't let you out just because you were had that disability from being from crashing. They put you to more duty, but well, not necessarily flying, huh?
Well, when I couldn't do anything for even after they turned me loose, from the hospital. I was in the hospital 105 days.
Wow.
And when they finally put me out, I still could not do full duty. But they did send me home for 45 days. By the way, I never got an official leave home that was ordered by the government, but I did get a sick leave home.
Oh, really?
And, but anyhow...
How, if you had a sick leave, how would you get from Hawaii to... back to the mainland?
Well,
or did you?
Yes, I went down and got a boat into San Francisco, and then I hitchhiked by airplane across the United States.
Oh, boy.
That's amazing.
Don Wilson, did you ever get hit?
No, but one day we were an anti-sub patrol, and I had a, you know, like a pressure gauge for a hydraulic fluid.
Yes.
And it started dropping. I told the pilot, I said, hey, we're losing hydraulic pressure, and our flaps, wheels, and everything was operated by
gas.
And he says, well, I know it. It's all over me. It got a leak up in the cab, and it was squirting all over
me. Spraying all over.
I said, well, I suggest we go back to carrier while we got a chance. He said, I'm flying this airplane. I said, okay, go ahead and fly it. So we finally got back to the carrier. So he went to put down the wheels. They wouldn't go down.
Oh, no.
So he said, well, I'm still going to try to
hydraulic
hand pump.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to try to. So he got up and he dived down. He operated hand pump when he pulled out. Pretty soon I watched the wheels. They come down and locked.
Wow.
I said, what a break that was.
Yeah.
Now, then, of course, the flaps. You got to have flaps.
Yes, right.
You know, you're right through the barrier.
Yeah.
So he starts fooling around, pumping it on. Pretty soon he got the flaps down. Well, you know, he come in, he landed perfect landing. Yeah. And the skipper of our squadron's waiting for him. And when he got out of the airplane, he walked over. The skipper jumped all over him, said, why didn't you come back when you had a chance to really get him down? Yeah. He said, well, I thought I could do it.
That didn't count.
You know, but it, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And one day, then, too, we were catapulted off. Just we cleared the flight deck. The engine quit. Another, well, this is it.
Oh, my.
We're done. And just before the wheels hit the water, they took a hold and away it went.
No kidding.
That's the reason I say I was blessed. You know?
Oh, I can only imagine what went through you.
Oh, yeah.
Boy. Oh, my. Yeah. Well, Cecil, you probably had a lot of, well, yes, you had a lot of close calls, too, in combat, my land.
Yeah, yeah,
men being killed probably all around you.
Well, yeah.
But you managed, now hold out, how old are you now, Cecil?
93.
And you made
half,
it all the way.
If you want to count it.
Yeah, that's great. That's super. But what was the worst time you had? What can you think of how the worst stressful moment?
Well, I would imagine it was be flanking the tank.
Oh, like you talked about, yeah.
And you can't figure out where the bullets are coming from. It's a problem.
So you were flanking, meaning you were surrounding the tank as it moved forward?
Yeah.
And instead you were taking...
But my whole platoon was spread out.
Yeah.
And so I was on one side of the tank, and my VAR man was on the other side, and the second scout was on my side. First thing you knowed, well, all the bullets were ricocheting off of there, and we was down on our hands and knees crawling.
No kidding. Oh, my. Wow. And this was on, was this on Leyte then?
Yes.
Yeah. We heard, and I, like I told you before, I can remember reading the headlines in the newspaper about Leyte. And you mentioned Mindanao, one of you.
I did.
Yeah. And that stood out in my mind, too, is I can remember all these places, you know, in the paper, in these battles that took place, what little news the paper could not, you know, that it was released, uncensored news. Yeah, that's something. I remember, too, remember Eddie Rickenbacker when he was out in the ocean for 24 days? And that was a big thing, too. The news media got all over that, naturally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, Cecil, at your age now, near 100, what is your goal to do yet? You have things in mind.
I'm Cecil. You're talking to him.
Oh, Cecil. Yeah, Kensel. Yeah, you're right, Kensel.
I'm on the computer. I'm not exaggerating. Sometimes 10 and 12 hours a day.
Is that right?
I do history. I am writing World War II memories. I've done the research on dairies. If I get a problem that I don't know, I want to dig in and find out,
Yes, and then
I write about it.
Yeah. Now, do you use Google? Do you use Google on the internet?
No, I have never gotten on the internet because what I write about is not on the internet.
Okay. Right. Oh, my. But that is something, at your age, being able to do what you're doing, that's just an amazing accomplishment.
I'm not exaggerating. I have somewhere between 10 and 12 different things that I'm working on at the present time.
That's what it takes to keep your mind occupied.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to comment on what Cecil said here a little while ago. They train you for battle, but seldom ever does anything go the way they trained you. And so you have to make up your own way and do your own thing. And it's just amazing how well the men did.
That's right. Well, like you dug a dug a foxhole with your helmet, Kensel, and you dug with a
shovel.
Yeah, what would you call it? A government-issued shovel.
And that's a very small shovel.
Yeah, it is. That's so narrow to dig a foxhole. But yet, you didn't want to. It was easier to use that because you've got less weight to throw out of the foxhole.
You know, this friend of mine was in the Battle of the Bulge, and I got talking to him, and he says, you know, he says, I had the best foxhole there ever was. He said, I had that really fixed up. I said, how can you fix up a foxhole? He says, it was. He said, I had a good one.
Well, it's something. And now, when you think about it, you tell that to an average person, they can't imagine digging a hole and jumping in it. Oh, wow.
Yeah. We built one outside of our tent down on Nuka Vitale that I called the Taj Mahal.
Really? Wow.
Four of us could get in there, and we domed it up and fixed it all up.
Yeah.
They would have had to hit us with a direct hit to hurt us.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah. Oh, okay. There's, your layout from the, Now, what I often wondered, too, toilet facilities. Was there such a thing anywhere?
Yeah, your helmet.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something nobody talks about.
You can see how good a head of hair he's got now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now, and Don, what about in a plane when you had to go? What happened?
Well, you didn't go number two. It was always number one, but you did have a two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Kensel?
Yeah, a tube.
Yeah, okay.
But,
you
didn't want to use that because the fellows on the ground had a fit.
Because
they had to clean that up.
Oh, I can imagine. Oh, yeah. When you fly, oh, my. Yeah. That's the way it goes. Oh, yes. The ins and out of combat in the military, by plane, by sea, by foot. Oh, boy. So we have a man who spent, you spent a lot of time digging foxholes too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Cecil, yeah.
Yes. Every night we try, Did you have to dig a new one?
Dig a new one, yes.
Because if you're digging, if you went back to the same one, you wasn't making much headway.
Okay, and there were usually water in it then.
Yeah, all the time you got done, because it rains 4 or 5 times a day.
And oh, my. Oh, wow. Okay, Don, you never had to dig a foxhole, did you?
No, I'm glad.
Not in the air.
It's just like when I was in boot camp, they come around and they said, we need people for submarines and aircraft. I said, you know, place to run on a sub.
Boy, yeah, right.
At least on an airplane, you can run the flight deck. That's
right. Well, we're all done.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The place to talk. From presidential nominee, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Okay, well, let's. Here we go. It's announcement time.
I want to write myself on an independent ticket and run for president of the United States.
What inspired this?
A lot of the situations where it's quite evident that it's time for a change. Everything must change. If there were no butterflies, if there were no caterpillars, there'd be no butterflies. Change, change, change. That's what it's time for, Scott. You know it. Terry Tackett knows it. Scott Anthony knows it. Brianna knows it. It's time for a change, not just in the housing market. I'm talking about globally. Our United States government is spending more money on building prisons and earning money per capita of inmates, and then won't give a darn about cutting school spending. Our teachers and our educators are underpaid, if you ask me, underpaid. Our kids need to compete with other nations, like China. The list goes on. I'm just sick and tired of walking up to little children and them being clueless without a PC.
WWGH Radio, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, the place to talk. Find us on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Look for us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio 107.1 FM and clicking like for exclusive content.
Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. This is Scott Spears, high above Marion in the WWG